just to say on this seminar, this course, sometimes we call it a seminar, sometimes we call it a course, it's kind of both. Just to remind you, it's a drop-in one, so you can just drop in. But we are going to be focusing more, you know, obviously much more on meditation. Often in our courses, there's, you know, we do little group discussions and there's more chance for discussing the input and so on. We want to more focus on meditation this time. I might try and get a bit of time so you can ask questions, at least some of you can. But I want to mainly, both of us want to mainly give you a bit of input, see if you can directly apply it to meditation. Yeah. And as I was saying in the announcement, some of you couldn't get out there. What we'd really recommend is to come to this whole seminar. I know it's very full and rather uncomfortable, and I'm going to try and see what I can do between now and next week to see if I can do anything about that. We might just get the whole room just padded and then we just push people in it. It'd be fine. You just pad the walls, everything would be fine. It's an unusual look for a Buddhist centre, but anyway, I'll see what I can do. So I know it's a bit uncomfortable, but I'd really recommend try to come to all of them if you can, and then really see if you can start applying what we're teaching on these evenings to your meditations at home. For many of you, that might mean like meditating at home, which is like the first, because you can't apply it to your meditation at home unless you're actually like meditating at home. Yeah? So this would be a really good time to start meditating at home. There's a lot to say about meditation. You can never finally teach it. What we're doing on this 8 weeks is really trying to guide you, as Charlotte was saying, about working with your mind. What you do when you come to this centre, and to any of our centres, you learn these fundamental practices, the mindfulness of breathing and metta bhavana, and you learn, hopefully, at some point, just sitting. They're kind of the structure of meditation. They're like, as Charlotte was saying, they're the frame of meditation. What we want to teach is, okay, let's take that frame away for the moment, and how do you work within either of those meditations? Yeah? So we won't be teaching those two practices specifically. We're going to be teaching you how to work in them with your mind. Do you see what I mean? That's the idea. Really, you need to be trying that at home, like every day, because you need to... I'm saying you a lot, aren't I? I'll need to be doing it at home as well, except for I'd come and do it down here. We need to discover what the teachings mean in our own experience. And that means being genuinely creative with what we're saying. Quite difficult to get this word creative right, because it easily gets a bit whimsical. But you need to try out what we're saying and then try and find what works for you. And what works for you one day might not work the next. You need to start to learn how to work with your mind. We can teach you the principles, but it's your mind that you need to work on. I've just come back from I've got a tan, I don't know if you noticed. thanks for that. Come back from a wee holiday. And one of the things I noticed I don't know whether you've ever been on a holiday, probably not. what I've noticed about holidays is there's something about the metaphor of holiday that makes you think you don't need to work on your mind. You just think you can just completely deregulate and still have this great time. But it just doesn't work. Yeah. I was in Sydney and I did this sort of cafe crawl eventually, and I was thinking, this is really not working. I had this, anyway, I won't go on and say what I had. But so you need to, in this 6 weeks, if you possibly can, and I really urge you to, start. Even if you just can only meditate for 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, see if you can start just saying, okay, what do they suggest I do? Let me just try and do that on my own. Because it's quite different when we've just said it and leading it. Can I remember what they said? Can I remember how to apply it to my mind? Until you start working like that in your mind, on your own, in a way outside of the centre, you won't really understand what we're going to get at you. And it will help you each week, because then you'll come back, and you'll come back with a much deeper sense of, you know, where we've gone already. And then each element of the teaching will add more to your experience. And hopefully, all of our minds will deepen then. Yeah. So that's what I really want to encourage you to do, yeah? For the next 6 weeks. Should be doable. So I just want to say a little bit more about kind of what we're going to be trying to cover in these 6 weeks, fairly briefly. And then I want to really just start with what we want to teach tonight. But yes, I do really wanted to start by emphasising you need to go home and start to apply it directly to your mind. See if you can, in the actual experience of doing it on your own, get what it's saying, which is an experience, not a theory, not a teaching in a way. It's like me teaching you now to paint or something, or to play the trumpet. You need to go home and practice. Otherwise, it's hardly worth coming back to do another lesson if you haven't practiced, yeah? Mm-hmm. Now, actually, it is worth you coming back. Don't get me wrong, folks. Obviously, it's much better if you practice in between time, and then when you come back to the next lesson, you're going to learn more, aren't you, by doing that. It's just like practicing the trumpet or something, yeah? So the two things we're going to be concentrating on, and we'll probably concentrate on the first for longer than the second, but is samadhi, it's the first thing we're going to concentrate on, and prajna is the second thing we're going to concentrate on. These are traditional Sanskrit terms. It might be generally good as well, by the way, as you come to these, to bring a notebook, because you know there will be things to note down. Don't worry if you haven't. So samadhi is basically a sort of, I'm using it to mean states of consciousness that transcend everyday consciousness. Yeah? So we have this ordinary consciousness that gets us to work, that helps us drive through traffic, have breakfast, listen to the radio. That ordinary consciousness that we tend to think, very easily think, without thinking about it, that is consciousness. It's just a level of consciousness. It's just a kind of species of consciousness, if you see what I mean. There are levels of consciousness above and beyond that consciousness, or below it, whichever metaphor you prefer, which quite exceed it, go far beyond it. Eventually, there are levels of consciousness which you really cannot even imagine beyond ordinary consciousness. The Buddhist vision of consciousness is that ordinary consciousness is a bit like cling film on the top of a jelly. I don't think that this is a traditional analogy. I don't think that Buddha would have used that one. But if you think that the ordinary consciousness is just like the cling film, and then you've got this big, deep jelly. I don't like that metaphor. Anyway, you get the point. Yeah? That your consciousness far exceeds ordinary consciousness. Yeah? So one of the things you need to meditate is some belief, and it is a belief, I think, at first, that there is levels of consciousness beyond your everyday consciousness. Whether your everyday consciousness, it tends to be upbeat and chirpy, or whether it tends to be slightly dour or cynical, or whether it tends to be tending to be low and self-destructive. Whatever your habitual setting of consciousness is, and we all have them, you need to have, to meditate really, an active willingness at least to believe that there are other levels of consciousness. Yeah? So samadhi, the term samadhi, means levels of consciousness above and beyond ordinary consciousness. They're typified by unity. You feel incredibly whole. They're experienced as extremely pleasurable, mostly. They can be sort of unpleasurable in a certain sort of way, but they're mostly experienced as extremely pleasurable. You feel incredible relief and release. And you usually feel very, very happy, and that your mind is moving very naturally without you having to make an effort. I mean, that's a very rough and ready description of samadhi. that the more technical description is energized calm. You feel fantastically calm and yet incredibly alert and awake. Yeah. Normally, in everyday consciousness, our calmness is a bit sort of studgy and dull and couch potato-y, and our awakeness is buzzy, frenetic, caffeine-fueled, if you know what I mean. So, samadhi is this consciousness that is incredibly calm, like you just couldn't get calmer almost, and incredibly alive. It's actually the consciousness that you really want, is that state of being really, really relaxed and really radiantly alive. Yeah. So that's the first thing we're going to become. Sounds nice, doesn't it? I want some of that. That's the first thing we're going to be concentrating on, is how to move from ordinary consciousness into samadhi, yeah? Into this energized calm, and into this calm happiness, this calm alertness, this calm joy even. It's quite a particular flavour to it. Yeah? You've probably had touches of it in your life. You may even have experienced it. It's not a Buddhist thing. It's part of your mind. You need to uncover it by meditation. Yeah? The second thing we'll be concentrating on is prajna. Now, prajna is the Sanskrit term used for wisdom. Wisdom isn't a very good word, I don't think. It's translated as wisdom. Because wisdom in Western thinking is usually just assumed to do with thinking, if you know what I mean, and philosophy and so on. Actually, it does involve thinking, but I prefer the word reflection or something like that. But it's not... It has a strong degree of reflection, but it's also backed up by something like samadhi. Wisdom is actually quite difficult, it's very difficult to talk about. It's as much a kind of atmosphere of someone's being as a particular thing they might say. If you meet anyone that's wise, and I often meet people who are wise, what they say has a particular depth and pungency. And if you then repeat it to somebody else, that depth and pungency just doesn't seem to be there. You sort of think, well, it sounded really great when they said it. Sometimes when you meet someone with it very strongly, like my own teacher, Bhante Sangharakshita, it seems to emanate from him. So I remember being in a room with him. We were having a meal with him. And it felt like we were all running very fast and he was sitting still. It felt like we were all terribly sort of active and agitated. And that there was this completely stable, deep, quiet centre to the room, and it was him. It was a bit frightening. Something that stable and confident and possessed in the room, slightly scary. And it made you want to chatter. Well, it made me want to chatter, as you can imagine, which is exactly what I did. I discovered I was relaxed enough to not ask him questions, but not relaxed enough to listen to the answers. So prajna is it's a state of your whole self. It involves wise emotion, wise thought, and even a sort of a deepened body. But it's usually translated, yes, as wisdom. And that will have to do, if you see what I mean. So you've got this attitude to meditation which is cultivating samadhi, which if you was to think of it as a colour spectrum, it would be all the warm colours. You know? So if you think of all the warm colours of the spectrum, that would be samadhi. All the cool colours of the spectrum would be prajna. What you're trying to get is the deep blue of prajna and the deep red of samadhi. The deep red of samadhi is this incredible state of wholeness, bliss, joy, even rapture. And you're trying to get in the middle of that this deep blue of wisdom, which is this, which goes beyond even those things, yeah? Which is this wholly new way of seeing the world, a completely new kind of consciousness, samadhi, prajna. That's what this figure represents, the Buddha represents, is a wholly new consciousness that never goes back to ordinary consciousness, not in the way that we understand it, anyway. Yeah. So he really, this figure represents a mystery at the heart of life. So mostly I want to concentrate on samadhi, because to really move towards prajna, to move towards any degree of wisdom, you need a real basis of positivity, well-being, relaxation, ease within yourself, within your skin. But more and more I want to try and be teaching both at the same time a little bit, because just as you can go from deep blue to a very pale blue, and it's still blue, that's what prajna can be like. If you can have a wise attitude to the fact that it's very full in here, that's a tiny, tiny bit of wisdom. It's at least wiser than a suit. You know, you could just get really fed up with it and irritated, and that will make the whole experience worse. And that's a foolish attitude. It's an unwise attitude. So you see that even though wisdom ends up with something, you know, incredibly profound, which we can't really talk about, it starts by just being a little bit more wise, in that simple sense, yeah? And just as samadhi takes us into levels of being and feeling that go quite beyond ordinary consciousness, we all have glimmers of pleasure, glimmers of integration, glimmers of completeness, and we're just trying to sort of go through the spectrum so we end up with this deep red of samadhi and this deep blue of prajna. Traditionally, and I'll try and stick to this as much as I can, is that you really need to work with samadhi a lot before you move on to prajna. I mean, really, prajna doesn't make sense unless you've committed yourself to a whole life of practice. In this tradition, commitment is the point where you become ordained. That's when you commit yourself to wisdom, you could say. And the training primarily up to ordination is making sure that the foundation is really there so that you can commit yourself to cultivating wisdom. That's what ordination means. It's the point of committing yourself to a path of practice that is cultivating both samadhi and prajna, and especially now moving more and more toward prajna. Actually, you always need the both. Even if you're just about to be enlightened, you still need samadhi. Yeah? Some ancient teachers say it's a bit like having the wings of a bird. You need the two wings, otherwise they just fly around in circles. Okay, so that's very, very broadly what we're going to be doing for the 6 weeks, trying to mainly talk about samadhi, this new kind of consciousness. And by golly, it's a consciousness that you really want. Don't worry about that. It's not a spooky consciousness. When you touch that consciousness, you think, oh, what a relief. It's like, you know, like upstairs in our community, we have a fan when you're cooking above the cooker. And sometimes we're all sitting and talking, and we've forgotten to turn the fan off. We did it tonight. Adam always remembers because it irritates him. And he turned it off. And you know when you turn and you think, oh, gosh. You hadn't realised that something was irritating you. You hadn't realised that something was doing something, pressing upon you. Samadhi is very like that. That fan goes off. And you hadn't realised how much you were doing, even when you thought you were relaxing. Yeah. It has that sense of exquisite relief. So that all sounds lovely, I'm sure you agree. But we need to look at the steps to it. So what I want to do just now is start to give you some pointers how to start to move towards samadhi. And as I say, I want you to then try to practice that during the week. And then come back and then we'll see if we can add to that. So the first thing to say is when you're meditating, even when you're just doing those two short meditations we were doing earlier on, much more is happening than you realise. So when you go home to do these practices, it feels odd at first. You sort of sit there, and there's a cat, if you've got one, you know, the traffic noise, and then there's this sort of flatmate you can hear outside, and you feel slightly surreptitious. You know, all those sort of funny things, and you think, oh no, this doesn't feel right. Even when it feels like that, when you're trying to meditate, even if you don't feel you're getting very far, much more is happening than you think. You're working on levels that you're not very conscious of. And if you can remind yourself of that when you meditate, it's helpful. Otherwise, you'll tend to want to, you know, kind of focus on, did you focus or not? Focus on the literal sense of what you thought was happening in the meditation. It's very easy to get into that. We tend to judge the meditation by the bit of consciousness that we're aware of. And that's actually not a very good judge. Yeah? So it's really important to remember that a lot more is going on than you realise when you try and meditate. I mean, sometimes you can have an experience of that. I remember when I first started meditating, and frankly, I couldn't meditate for toffee, so don't worry. I've been there, sometimes still return there. I remember halfway through a meditation, someone ringing me up, and I got up and answered the phone, and I suddenly realised that I was much deeper than I realised. You know, trying to say hello and speak and answer a question. I suddenly realised, because at the time, you know, I just thought, oh, I may as well just get up and answer the phone because nothing's happening. But then when I spoke, I suddenly realised that there was much more going on than I thought. So it's really worth reminding yourself of that so that you don't get into this highly self-evaluative thing that we so easily do. Was that one any good? Could I do it? Did it work? All that kind of stuff. Which is really just judging the meditation by this very thin band of consciousness that we're aware of. So see if you can just remind yourself of that. Yeah. As you go through the week, really try to encourage yourself to experiment with what we're suggesting. Yeah. Play in your meditation. Try to learn the principles that we're teaching, but then, you know, you need to then experiment with them, find out in the moment what works. I mean, I've never been an actor, but I'd imagine it's a bit like that when you're acting. You know, you rehearse it, you know what the part is about, you might have read up on it, you might have watched other actors do it. I'm just making this up. But presumably when you go on the stage, you're also trying to find it. You're trying to catch it now. How would I say, a great actor's always, how would I say this line now? Can I catch it, if you see what I mean? That's what good actors do. They don't just sort of do what they've got already. They're trying to find the moment as well. So in your meditations, you'll need to be doing that. And that means, as you go through the meditation, you need to be sort of keep monitoring your attitude to yourself and the meditation, if you see what I mean. Yeah. So you need to just keep just checking. What am I doing here? Am I pushing it? What's my attitude? What's happening? Yeah? Monitoring your attitude, your feelings in the meditation. Yeah? So the main thing that's what I want to suggest, that you meditate, that you remember that there's much more going on than you think, and that you try to drop that evaluative thing, just do the practice, keep monitoring what your attitude is to the practice. Have you started to get irritated with meditating? Do you want to do it or not? Just because you don't doesn't mean to say you don't do it. If you do, just keep on monitoring, yes, but how do I feel about doing this just now? And try and be experimental. Try and play a bit with the practice. Yeah? Okay, I just want to now say a bit about how to work in these meditations that we're going to be doing. Often when I prepare for these seminars, when I do, I realise I've tried to say much more than is actually possible, so I'll say less than I can. So, when you're meditating, every time you sit down to meditate, you're working with your mind. That's what you're doing. You can work with your mind also on the bus, cycling to work, in a meeting, trying not to react. In a way, Buddhist practice is about working with your mind all the time. But in meditation, it's doing that in a more concentrated way. You're working with your mind. So the mind you experience as you sit down to meditate is what you're working with. There's not something else called meditation which you're trying to learn. Do you see what I mean? Meditation is just a word. What it means is closing your eyes and working with your mind. And as Shravan Siddhi said, this, even this word mind is a bit confusing because it sounds like it's working with your thoughts. By mind I mean your thoughts, your emotions and your body. And you're working with how that is appearing to you in this meditation just now, including your attitude to it. Your attitude to your thoughts. I don't like having these thoughts. I do like having these thoughts. Your attitude to your feelings. I wish I wasn't having these feelings. I wish I was having more of them, etc. Yeah? Your direct experience and your attitude to your experience. Because your attitude to your experience creates your experience, pretty much. Yeah. So you need to be sensitive to both. We were trying to become sensitive to our body experience, but then we're also trying to be sensitive to our attitude to our body in the meditation. Yeah. Whether we want to experience the body and so on. When you sit to meditate, you'll experience one of five things, very likely, what are called the five hindrances. The actual Pali word is niranava, which means coverings, which I think is much better than hindrances. Hindrances sounds like there's something in your way, and again, we can so easily want to just get rid of something in our way. What we're trying to do is get beneath a kind of coverings to our mind. Ordinary consciousness is made up of five different coverings. Yeah? And those are, you'll either feel that you want something, i.e. something that's not in your experience just now, a back rub, sex, a cheesecake, holiday in Marbella, not to be living in London, not to be in this job, whatever it is, not to be in a crowded Buddhist centre. You'll either not want... No, hang on. I'm mixing it up. Slow down. You'll be either wanting something or not wanting something. Those two, yeah? So you'll either be wanting something that isn't in your experience just now, or you'll be not wanting something that is in your experience just now. Yeah? In a way, those are the two main ones, aren't they? You either, when you close your eyes, you're either wanting something, wanting this to end, wanting something tomorrow, or you're not wanting something, you're not wanting the pain in your knee, you're not wanting this uncomfortable emotional experience that you can't name. Yeah, you're trying, those are two of the things that you'll notice. Those are two of the coverings of our mind. And that can go from mild, really, really mild, that you hardly notice wanting or not wanting, to lust or, you know, absolute raging hatred. Yeah? Or you can be anxious and buzzy, you know, sort of restless, anxious, worrying, that kind of state, which is slightly frenetic. Or you can be dull, tired, slothful. Yeah? So there you go, that's four. Or you can be just doubtful. Doubt is actually much more difficult to spot. You can notice it usually by the fact that you never quite get round to deciding to do this meditation thing. Either you never get to the cushions, or when you do, you never quite start. You haven't really decided this is important. You think you might think it's good for you, but you haven't really decided emotionally that it's important. Or you don't think that you can do it. Yeah? So those are what are called the five niranavas, the five coverings. They're the cling film of our mind. We want something, very mildly or like massively. We don't want something, very mildly or, you know, destructively. We feel anxious and restless, or we feel tired and dull, or depressive even, or we doubtful, we're not sure, we can't commit ourselves, we're uncommitted, we vacillate. Yeah? So when you're meditating, you're working with those five things. Whatever meditation practice you're doing, you're always working with those five great coverings of your mind. Another way I've been thinking of them is like five winds that just blow through our mind, blowing us this way and that way. Yeah? And that's all they are. They're not you. They're not They're not who you are. They're just this bit of cling film in your mind. It's not an accurate description of you. There is much more, much, much more to you than those five things. They're just this covering, yeah? So the cling film does work. We go back to covering. Yeah? That must have been where I got it from. So when you're meditating, you need to remember that you'll be going to be working with those five things. And when you meditate, it actually highlights them. You actually start to notice them. And that's a good thing. Often we just don't notice that we're in the grip of one of those five things. That actually, it's not all these people are to blame, but I've got this aversion. It's not that all of these people are beautiful, but I'm wanting them. Yeah, they might be beautiful as well, etc., etc. It's not that all these people are stressing me out, but I've got anxiety. Yeah. Even that is much more difficult to do than it sounds, to really take ownership of these five things. To say, this is me feeling hatred. One of the things I've been wanting to stress is human beings feel much more hatred than they often let on to themselves. We're living in a very pampered world, most of us now, so we put a lot of cotton wool between our self-sense and our experience. So we often don't experience the rising up of hate. But we've got a lot more of it. And if you don't think you have, all I suggest you do is meditate for a bit and you'll discover it. Yeah? It's out there somewhere. So it's really important, that act of recognising it, that these are those, just these coverings, is really, really important. The important way of doing that is to not take them personally. And that needs to be a practice in itself, to be willing to feel those states of mind, which are, all these states of mind have a thought element. If I'm in a bad mood, if I've got aversion, if I don't want something, I'll be thinking about things I don't want, I'll be having emotions of anger and aversion, and my body will be tensing up. Yeah. So you're trying to own it on all of those levels. Here I am in an aversive mental state. This is the state of mind I'm in. I've got these thoughts, I've got these feelings, and look what's happening to my body. Yeah? Here I am in a lusting state of mind. I've got these thoughts, I've got these feelings, I've got this body sense. You need to do all that without any sense of guilt, without any sense of self-censorship. You're just trying to take ownership of that level of consciousness. And you see how it's much easier to do that if you don't take it personally. If you just think they're just these winds that blow through all of our mind, it's not really your hatred or my hatred. Sometimes it can be quite shocking, can't it, your own aversion when it flares up. I don't know whether any of you cycle, I do, but sometimes if a car gets too close to you, suddenly this rage can just flare up. It can really quite shock you, you know. So you're trying to take ownership of it and feel it and remember that it's shared, it blows through us. It actually is contagious as well, isn't it? I used to be a nurse and we used to nurse people in bays, in eight-bedded bays. And, you know, if you had somebody in a very bad mental state, it would spread to the rest of the bay. If you had somebody in a good mental state, it would spread to the rest of the bay. And what would happen, I noticed, even then when I was my early 20s, is that would change the world, because the nurses would tend to gravitate to the bays where the people were nicer. Even though they tried not to, they'd just find themselves going into that room where they were really chatty and the patients were really friendly and very appreciative, and you gradually found yourself avoiding people who were not. And sometimes you discovered later just they were in a lot of pain. You know, you can sort of even blame other people for their hatreds and so on, and then you discover later on, oh, I see, I understand now. So these five things, they're not yours, they're not personal, they blow through the world, we infect each other with them moment by moment. You can feel it almost in a room. When the room gets calmer, you can feel that the atmosphere change. When people start to get restless, you can feel it ripple across the room. Yeah? So the first thing to say is not to take them personally. That means being really willing to feel it without thinking that that's me, that that describes me, that that's true of me. It's just winds blowing through the mind. Yeah. The second thing, and this is more difficult still, is not to get caught up in that perspective. To try to notice, like this morning, I've just got back, as I say, from Australia, and I woke up at 5 this morning because I've got jet lag. Heaven only knows what time I'll wake up tomorrow. And for some reason, I've been waking up with horrible anxiety, in sort of nameless anxiety. And I've just been in my meditation this morning, just trying to just let myself just feel that, like it's buzzing in the body, and just let myself just really feel that through, without thinking, oh no, I'm anxious, what am I anxious about? Oh, it's because of work, or da-da-da. Do you see what I mean? I can just try to think, okay, it's not me, it's not my anxiety, it's not who I am. Let me just feel what this wind of anxiety feels like. It's actually quite unpleasant, but when I had that attitude of just curious interest, it started to change. Of course, if I think, oh, it'll start to change if I bring that attitude, it doesn't work. Your mind knows what you're doing. Don't try and trick yourself, because your mind has always got to get there first. So try and not take it personally, and then try not to get caught up in perspective. It can be tricky to do, but it is doable. Like this morning, it was slightly remarkable. I had this horrible anxiety, just worked with it in this way, very gently, tried to stay aware of my whole body throughout the whole meditation, felt that horrible buzzing feeling, and just let it go more, let go into it, let welcome it even. By the end, I felt completely fine. So you just try to feel it, don't take it personally, try not to get wrapped up into the perspective of it, which is mainly a thought thing, isn't it? Oh no, what's wrong? I feel really anxious. I was anxious yesterday. What's going on? It's because of work. What is it about work? You know, that's what we get trapped in. The feelings aren't dangerous. It's the thoughts that's dangerous. Keep trying to drop out of that narrative back into the direct sensation. Yeah? So that's noticing these 5 hindrances, not taking them personally, and not getting caught up in their perspective, which means feeling them much more directly and stepping out of the narrative that spins out of them. Anxiety is very noticeable, isn't it? When you get anxious, I notice, especially when you get very anxious, it's like the world fills with thought, doesn't it? With predictions, with fears, with catastrophes. And one of my friends gets very, very anxious indeed, and I can see his whole world fill with possible catastrophes. You can almost see them in his mind around him. You can, as he walks around, I can see that he's in that state of mind. Very, very painful state of mind, that state of mind. So you just sort of think, okay, let me just feel what that's like in the body. Let me try to welcome it, because it's not me. It's not who I am. I don't need to take it personally. It doesn't. If we take it personally, we think it might mean something. Mean something about me, my life, where it's going. And you see where that's going, yeah? So really this week, I had written much more down than this, but that's the main thing I want to get you to do is notice these 5 hindrances, wanting things, not wanting things, feeling anxious and jittery or dull and tired or doubtful. Try to really feel it in the body, in your emotions. It's not a thought, it has a thought element. It has a body element and an emotional element. Try and really feel it. Try to work, actually practice at not taking it personally, which means being willing to touch it. Like today with my anxiety, it's like just going up to a sort of horrible buzzy cloud. It's got a bit of electricity in it, and being willing to touch it. And that might be being willing to touch a depressive feeling. That might be being willing to touch, when you get very excitable. You've got a date that night and you sort of can't wait to see them. It's actually quite breathless. It's very like anxiety, really. And it can feel very unstable. Can you feel that? Yeah. Often, of course, it's feeling nothing very much. most of our experience just isn't anything like as dramatic as that. We just feel slightly sort of dullish, okay-ish, kind of what's the problem? Try and feel that, yeah? I think if most of us are asked how we feel, we'd say, okay, sort of ish-ish, you know, which is kind of a muddling, middle-muddle, rainy, kind of slightly half-pie sunny, nothing very much, yeah? But what does it feel like, yeah? Try not to take it personally, and try not to get caught in the perspective.